Welcome back to Took and Teach. We are on episode 5, would you believe? And
God, that's flown, isn't it?
I know. And this week's theme for us is being observed.
Those dreaded words.
Yep. For all teachers, at most stages of your career, you're observed in some capacity every year.
Oh, 100%.
At least. Well, I mean, definitely every year. Certainly I have been. Whether that be an informal, you know, learning walk where someone will just walk in and, you know, like ask what's happening and see what's going on and kind of check that the pace in the learning and things are relevant and that they're happening, to the formal organised observations that we have, basically because we've got these kids' futures in our hands, like we were saying last week's episode. It kind of gives us that
responsibility
and I guess puts the onus on us to make sure that the quality of teaching and learning is consistent.
Yeah, and it's one of those where I think we hear the word observations and immediately we jump to something negative because it is stressful. I mean, the worst ones are when it's like, I've said observations.
Yeah, let's not mention that word.
That's horrible. And it's that fear all the time that we're being judged for something, and as human beings, I think we naturally look for the negatives in something rather than walking out and going, do you know what? That was a bloody good lesson. Like,
yeah.
I've worked hard. These kids have learnt something. They're happy.
Yeah.
You know, and it is horrible. And to be honest, I feel like sometimes I'm a bit of like a performer.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not myself. Every time I've been observed this year, my kids have gone, you were totally different then. You're not who you are now.
Yeah. But that's a natural response for anybody where you feel you're being judged. Like, if you look at a talent show on TV, someone will come on the stage and they'll say how nervous they are, or they'll, you know, maybe not sing to the best that they could because the nerves got the better of them. And so for any sort of performance, if you want to call it that, you know, of course you're impacted by who your audience is, even to the point of, like, when you first walk into a class that you've never taught before, you're nervous because it's a whole new audience who, you know,
yeah,
you're used to singing in front of your friends and family, but walking in a room full of strangers, whether they're adults or children, you naturally are going to react differently, I think, to those that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like for me as an NQT, I've been observed, and probably over-observed, if I'm quite honest, this year. And
yeah,
I imagine there's several NQTs out there who feel exactly the same way. But within our institution, if you will, we have to be observed 3 times within a week.
Yeah.
And that can be at any point from the start of the year till, I think it was it Easter that they all had to be completed this year?
Well, there was supposed to be Christmas, but then there was loads of things.
There was a
that
lot happening.
Went on, yeah.
There?
And so, yeah, I think it was February half term, everybody had been observed.
Yeah, and for me, I found that particularly daunting because I got observed in October. So as an NQT, teaching, doing my teacher training FE, and then coming to a high school and being observed practically straight away. It started the first week of October.
Yeah.
That was absolutely terrifying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, mine was November. And for me, it was a new school. It was somebody who, you know, yes, they'd observed me during my interview time, but at the same time, I know that, for me anyway, I had just about got my head around the classes and the kids' names and, you know, the behaviour expectations and everything that goes alongside joining a new school. And for us, certainly, I know how stressed we both were at the separate times that it happened. And it so happens that obviously in the run-up to the 6-week holidays, basically we get a follow-up from that by our line manager, who comes in and observes a lesson of our choice, which is different, obviously, which is better.
Yeah, it is better. Because I felt with my observation early on in the year, in the October, like we were just talking about, I wound up with being observed with 2 of probably my most challenging classes.
Yeah, I did.
And sometimes that really hinders you, not because necessarily the low ability per se, because they were my lower ability sets, but it's that I didn't feel like I had the opportunity to really showcase what I can do. You know,
yeah.
the potential to really show my subject knowledge, or, you know,
yeah,
you know those really amazing lessons that you have with, like, the super keen students, the ones who want to do well. Maybe
yeah.
not always, you know, the highest ability ones, but the ones who are keen and,
yeah, and
still
ready
give it the
learn.
Best show.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have subject knowledge, as was clear in my observations, and it's something that I'm not over yet, clearly. But from the, based on the observations that we had, you know, at the start of, or the end of last year, we definitely, you know, at the time, for me anyway, I took, you know how hard I took the,
yeah,
the observations, because actually, you know, without calling anybody out on it, my lessons that I was observed in were good lessons, and I am one of the most reflective people in the profession. I know that. That's one skill that I can hand on heart say, I will look at a lesson and I'll say, that was shit. Or I'll look at a lesson and I'll say, well, this is what went well about it, and this is how I would change that lesson the next time I do it.
I just have to say, just to jump in on that point, why do we live in a world where everything, something needs to be better?
Yeah.
I feel like we scrutinise the kids' words within an inch of their life, saying, well, this was really good, however you need to do this. Why can we not just say, do you know what? Cracking effort.
Well done.
Really well done. 80% of that lesson was absolutely bob on. Yeah, okay, 20% of that was a little bit crappy. Let's just discard that. On the grand scheme of things, your pace was really good, your lesson was really good.
Yeah.
Why do we have to fixate on what was bad about it?
And that's definitely something that, you know, is inherently part of our profession. I think there's very few times in my career where I've been formally observed and there's not been things that they'll pick apart, even if... So I remember one observation at my last school, and the head teacher came in and she observed me, and she said to me, oh, that was a fantastic lesson. There is literally nothing that I would have changed. And she said this at the start of my feedback meeting, and then she went on and she listed how, you know, all the things that she thought had gone really well. And then in the part where it said areas for development, she said, so why were the kids reading for 10 minutes at the start?
Seriously.
And I said, well, first of all, it's our department policy that every student reads for 10 minutes at the start of every lesson, number one. Number two, I said, it's a time when reading for enjoyment is, and it's a rare time when reading
yeah.
for enjoyment is pushed, because, you know, every other time that we are telling kids to read, we're sending them the message that every time they read, they have to do something associated
yeah.
with it. And, you know, some of the greatest people who have done so much research on reading and creating a reading culture, Kenny Piper, for example, we've mentioned him before in the podcast. He has written a book all about, you know, creating a reading culture within schools, and how it's one of the main tools we can give to our kids that prepares them for the future, that expands their vocabulary, allows them to be creative, it allows them to be themselves, and to, you know, there's that quote, a reader lives a thousand lives, you know, someone who doesn't read lives one. And so for me, I was like, you know, I did lose it during that meeting a little bit, because as we know, I can be a bit emotional when it comes to kids, like my kids, my pupils, and I was like, we read for 10 minutes because they're allowed to read for enjoyment, and that's what we do, and it's something that should never be put as an area for development.
No.
And to be fair, the woman, she did back down and she said, look, okay, I get it, and I agree. Whereas in the observations at the start of the year, for me, I felt a lot of it was very nitpicky, and
yeah,
that it wasn't accurate. Quite honestly, for me, it wasn't an accurate reflection of me as a teacher.
No.
And it
but
really,
they never are, though.
Well, I mean, they should be, though, is what I'm saying. And it really, you know, it dragged me right down in
yeah,
terms of, it made me so angry and upset.
And very bitter.
I'm still not over it. I have no subject knowledge. I'm still not over it. And so, like, for me, and it's not a personal thing against anybody, it's not a personal attack on the observer or whatever, I just think, look at the kids in front of you, first of all, because every class is different. every class has a different dynamic. If you walk into a lower ability set and you're seeing every child in that class taking it in turns to read out loud, every child in that class being asked to answer a question,
yeah,
every child in that class being interested and engaged in what they're learning, take that as the success.
Yeah.
Don't then pick it apart because one kid shouted out. You know, that for me really grinds my gears.
Yeah.
So I think it maybe a good way to format this episode would be to go from like the start of when you first find out you've got your observation all the way through to the feedback section.
Yeah.
It just seems to make sense to do it in some sort of order rather than me just ranting about how fuming I am about previous observations.
Which I'm pretty sure you could fill a full podcast episode.
Oh, 100%. Like, I literally could talk.
Several days went on with that.
Oh, I mean...
Weeks
happened. So the first thing is obviously because you've just had your...
yes.
Your second visit or your
revisit.
Mine is on Monday, and for me anyway, we got to choose our class this time, which was lovely.
So much better.
I don't know about you, but I definitely straight away thought, right, where am I doing the best teaching at my maximum capacity?
Yeah, 100%.
Top set.
Yeah, I went straight to top set, but my one at the moment, well, the class which I was observed with my degree being history and English, my passion being about the Nazis, the Holocaust and things, was currently studying Once by Morris Leitzman, which is a fantastic book. The kids are so engaged with it, genuinely really interested, because there's so much context behind it. I'm so passionate about it, and I thought, this is my time to really showcase my subject knowledge, as well as my historical context as well.
Definitely.
And to say I'm not strong in literature, that's showing my literacy skill.
And do you know what? I think that's a really good thing as well, that you've not just gone for a language lesson or whatever. You've pushed yourself, and that in itself should be recognised.
It wasn't. Let me just clarify. That wasn't recognised at all.
Well, I'm recognising it.
Thank you.
I think that it's a very brave move knowing how you feel about literature. For me, I've gone the safer option in that I'm quite tied at the minute because obviously in the run-up, we've only got 2 weeks left.
Yeah, the kids are bouncing, to be
the
fair.
The kids are bouncing, and also most of my teaching in terms of the units that we're working on isn't complete, but it's at the point of completion.
Yeah, it is.
Where we're rounding up learning, we're evaluating. You know, if we're on the Bloom's Taxonomy scale, I know how much you hate it, but...
I don't hate it, I just...
We're at the evaluation.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, we're at the evaluation creation stage. We've gone through, like, our remembering, we've looked at our understanding, we've applied our... you know, skills that we've already learned, we've analysed different parts of the text, and now it's that next step up, that evaluation and that creation. And so for me, my natural instinct was go for one of the classes I wasn't observed with before.
Yeah.
And
it's by somebody different, though.
It's by someone different, which is good as well.
And in the English, so it's one of our line managers.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've gone for my top set class, and we are studying Of Mice and Men, which is a novel that I have taught, I think now, 4 or 5 times in my 6 years of teaching. And it's one that I know inside and out. It's one that I'm really comfortable with in terms of my subject knowledge of it. I won't have to read it.
Are you sure
that
that's going to come through, though?
I don't know if it'll come through in my lesson. I will admit that I don't know if it'll come through in the lesson, because clearly I can't showcase it very well, but it's definitely one that, you know, I'm pretty on fire with.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like, today with that class, we were doing a debate over the morality of George's decisions in Of Mice and Men, and they absolutely smashed out the park.
To be fair, that class of yours is an amazing class.
Like,
they are the kids who are, like, good humans. You know, the ones you look at and you think, you are going to be a bloody good person. Even if you're not the best at English... lovely group.
Yeah.
Your class dynamic worked really well. Your rapport is on point.
Yeah.
Like, they've got a lot of time for you, a lot of respect from you. Every time I bump into them or I've spoken with them in the corridor, they always sing your praises. Like, you have worked bloody hard with that class.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some people say, oh, top set is like an easy one. Actually, to build relationships within a top set and to challenge them and keep the pace up all the time,
and I think
can be difficult.
The arrogance as well that can come with a top set.
Yeah, see, I'm lucky. Mine are not like that at all.
You but know, I mean, just on
on a whole as a mindset,
and especially considering the area that we're in is quite an affluent area. Quite a lot of kids, obviously, come from really not all of them, but majority, I would say, come from quite a well off background, and a lot are going to go into family businesses and things like that. That is a battle for us sometimes.
It can be, and I think, you know, that's why that relationship is so good.
Yeah.
But for me, I mean, I started off the start of this week when I arranged the observation. I started thinking, right, what can I do that's going to not just showcase me, but showcase the progress that the kids have made this year. And I thought, let's link it to GCSE skills, because it is a bridging unit into Key Stage 4 for that class. And so my planning started off by, right, what do they already know? What do I want them to achieve by the end of the lesson? And how am I going to get there?
Well, I think it's pretty much like any standard lesson plan, really.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about it. But then I think it's once you've got your rough ideas of thinking, right, okay, what do I want them to know by the end of this lesson? That's when you start, like, upping it to not just, right, okay, I'm going to get them to do this. We're going to do this writing task. We're going to do loads of quiet work, blah, blah, blah. This is the time we need to have bits of group work. This is where you need to make it blatantly obvious
to the
observer.
Yeah.
This is why I'm doing this.
Yeah, definitely.
And whereas when we're teaching normal classes, we tend to say it, but we don't tend to have it like plastered everywhere, bouncing arrows pointing to it.
I mean, to be fair, during a lot of my teaching time, unless it's a specific task that I want on the board, I'm much more likely to explain something than have it on a PowerPoint. Whereas for observed lessons, I think just having that direct pointer at, this is why I'm doing this, this is what my goals are. And don't get me wrong, I do need to do it more often during lessons that aren't observed, and I know that. And it is something that naturally I think I've got better at as the years have gone on, but I still don't do it every single lesson.
No.
And with these guys, you know, I'm just pointed out, you know, my big picture. I've pointed out my lesson objective for that lesson. And you've seen the lesson that I've planned.
Yeah, your lesson does look very, very good, to be fair.
I'm just hoping.
It was kind of, I suppose, kind of handy knowing how our English department works that I had mine. I was like, quick, you need to do this. Whatever you've done, put this in. This is one of the boxes that they need to tick.
Yeah.
Because the person who observed me didn't herself have her end of year appraisal till the day before mine.
Yeah.
So she only got her feedback on the same day I got my feedback.
Right.
So we didn't even know what the documents were like until very much the last minute.
Yeah, I mean, I got sent the document today with the criteria on it, and it's the same criteria as the first one.
Yeah.
But obviously, because we were new at the school, we didn't know that necessarily. Yeah. And so, like, I've gone through, I've looked at it, the subject knowledge box is on there, so fingers crossed I will get that ticked this time.
God, you are not going to let this
I'm not letting it go, ever. And I think, for me, the planning and brainstorming stage is the most exciting but the most stressful part, because you get excited because you're like, oh my god, I could do this, and I could have them stand on their head upside down reciting quotes, and then you're like, right, wait a minute, just pull it in a little bit.
At least not turning the tables upside down and watching Titanic.
That is very true. I've not done that as of yet. I mean, it might happen.
Great idea.
If it does happen, then maybe it's time for me to quit teaching.
But yeah, definitely it's that planning. And I, to be fair, do get quite excited about the planning element and like, oh, what we can do and how we're going to go and how's the lesson going to go. The problem I had with mine, planned, great lesson. In my mind, it worked amazingly. I've run it by you, so we're going to talk about context. I'm going to do differentiation by giving, you know, planning out the group strategically and rather than just doing it on the door, you know, as they're going through, because I've seen it before where people have given them like a different shape on a post-it note or a different coloured card, whatever. I'd already pre-planned it, looked at my register, people who went in sorted that out straight away. But it was that horrible bastard moment when I explained it again, then over-explained it, and one of my highest ability students put it around up and went, what are we actually doing? And I died inside.
Yeah. And I think because they think, oh, I don't want to get it wrong for you, they want to clarify it to within an inch of its life. But also, because you're nervous on the spot, you over-explain everything and you're like, blah, 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 and run on for about 5 minutes more than you should.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, the kids have forgotten what you said at the start of that 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
to be fair, I did have instructions up on the board. But they were one of those arrogant ones we were talking about and just being a little dick.
Okay.
And it was one of those, and I was like, you little bastard, in my mind. Like, you have just thrown me straight under that bus.
Yeah.
And even getting my feedback, she was like, I'm sure they did that on purpose to you.
Well, at least that your observer, like, recognised that as well, though. My next step for anything that I do is my preparation of resources. Once I've got my idea, I want to solidify that idea into, like, time slots, kind of, so that I know, is this enough? Do I need to add a little extra? I usually always have an extra task ready to go.
100%.
But it's one of those tasks that even if I don't get to, I can skip past it to my plenary. I hate.
Yeah, but that's that observation ticking box, isn't
plenaries.
It?
Plenaries. But yeah.
That's that hoop we all have to jump through.
I can't, yeah. I don't even get me started on plenaries because...
Okay, that's a separate rant.
That's a separate rant. So today I sat down and I thought, right, I had the bare bones of my presentation, of my lesson, and I ran it by you and you said, this morning, you said, why don't you, like, put on the board the names of the people who are in the different groups so that you've got a good mix, but also to differentiate...
That seems to be the big thing at the moment, doesn't it? This differentiation, but not just by output, by input.
Yeah,
and that was something that came back on mind. Even though I did have differentiated starter task, speaking of which, that's just come to me, they want a settling task. So before your students even get in on the desk, they need to have some kind of settling task before a starter task. Apparently. That's what they want.
Well, that's not happening, so tough.
That was one of the big things that came back. But I did have a starter task on the thing, but apparently they needed a settling task to get them in and quiet first.
Right, well, again, that's not happening. So my starter task is sufficient, and if my observer doesn't like that, then that's up to them. But it gets ridiculous. It gets beyond a joke. So
my thing is this resources. Don't get me wrong, love a good resource.
Oh, yeah,
my
do.
Problem is when I spend hours and hours and hours creating a resource... Which links, there's direct links. It's not just like, oh, here's a word search. Like,
yeah.
It's got a really good link. It ties in from the last lesson. And then you end up picking them all up off the floor because none of them stuck them in the book.
Yeah.
Or
the expectation is that you mark them.
Yeah. And my problem is, why am I spending ages planning stuff on paper, printing it out? Because it is time. It takes the time to put it into Reaper Graphics.
So you're responsible for global warming.
Exactly. I am that bitch who's caused the whole thing. But my problem is how it takes, 48 hours when we've got to put it into Repro?
Yeah.
Then got to go down and collect it. Then got to distribute it onto the tables. To what? Just pick it up after the end of the day?
Yeah.
At the end of the lesson.
To be fair, today when I was making my resources to go with Monday's lesson, I had a mass... like freak out because I thought, oh my god, I've not made a resource to go alongside this for, like, to differentiate by input, so that basically my task is that they're given a character, they have to pick out 3 reasons or 4 reasons or 5 reasons depending on the group that they're in, why they feel sympathy for
one of those characters.
And then they have to find evidence and match it to terminology and then quote explode that evidence. But what I realised is that one of the things that they are the weakest on as a class is identifying terminology out with their normal comfort zone. So they can all tell me what a noun, an adjective, a verb is, an adverb, but they can't maybe go into, and again, probably similes and metaphors they're fine with, but it's more things like symbolism and syntax and thinking about, like, the more complex ideas.
Which for your set they should be doing.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong, they do know them somewhere in the deepest recesses of their brain. They have been taught them, but I think last year they didn't have a consistent teacher.
No.
Last year, I don't know the ins and outs, but their work didn't seem to be marked and things, and so their confidence is on the floor with it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, I better have a terminology sheet that they can... have if they ask for it, but I'm not going to give them it out unless it's somebody who's really struggling. And I emailed the repro guy and I said, like, today I just put the subject help in capital letters with an exclamation mark, and they were in my pigeonhole at the end of the day.
Oh, he is amazing though, to be fair.
So I was like, You are an absolute legend. But yeah, preparing my resource today, I ran into your room, I think, period two, and was like, my computer's deleted the whole thing. And I'd already put all their names into a table.
Yep.
I'd done everything. I even said to my observer, I said, just to let you know, I've just had to remake my whole lesson because, like, my computer shut down, my resource deleted, my PowerPoint deleted, like, my groups that I had in my head, gone. And do you know that way when you're panicking, you've only got one free lesson left to, like, finalise all the stuff you need finalised.
Yep.
And everything that you've thought of goes out of your brain, so you're then back to square one. That happened.
That's grim.
Luckily, I managed to get it done, and I feel pretty confident going into Monday that at least I'm doing a lesson that the kids are going to love.
Is it Monday lesson one?
Period one.
Oof. At least it'll be fresh face though.
Yep. Or sleeping.
Rather than lesson five on Friday.
True.
Which is always grim in itself.
But
it is just about taking that time really, isn't it? And really having to think about it. It does frustrate me with observations because I do feel like I've really got to put on some kind of performance, and that is what it is. And it's not about the kids learning, it's about ticking boxes sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating thing. It's like, if you came and observed me with this class over a week, you would see the development.
And the progress,
I mean. Because sometimes it is just like, maybe it's like a content lesson where they're just learning one thing, and that way you cannot show that development in one lesson. Or sometimes it's, I don't know, got a terminology recap.
Yeah.
Because they need it, because they're lacking in it, or something like that. And again, in that lesson, sometimes they can't be all singing or dancing.
Of course
sometimes
not.
They can't all have, like, differentiation, and they can't all have, you know, group work and iPads and whatever.
Sometimes it's I'm going to stand here and I'm going to tell you what this knowledge is that you need.
Yeah.
Because there's the only way that we can do it is this way. And I do think, you know, there is always room for differentiation, but the problem is time. We do not have enough hours in a day to differentiate for every student who needs differentiation, and that's hard to admit because they deserve it. But at the same point, like, you're like, what do you want me not to do in order to differentiate that whole lesson?
But also, we were talking about, I'm sure it was us who were talking about this earlier on today, that the exam's not differentiated.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the end of year exam, irrespective of what year they're in, what set they're in, they all do the same exam.
And at GCSE, they'll all set the same English exam.
Obviously, if they require one-to-one support or a scribe or a reader or a movement breaks, that's a different circumstance. But ultimately, how we get them to that exam, it doesn't matter. And sometimes we can differentiate by the way in which we deliver that lesson, the way in which we speak and we guide them to that point, or the way in which we sit down and have a one-to-one conversation with the student who's clearly struggling on the knees. Because they don't need a worksheet that tells them this is what this is.
Yeah.
They need an actual human conversation to get them to that point.
Oh, 100%. Definitely. And I think as well, that ties quite nicely into the next thing that we spoke about when we thought about observations, and that is our own mindsets.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up in the stress of an observation. And actually, until this year, I've been pretty chill with observations. Even before that first set of observations, I said to you, don't worry about it, just be yourself, go in there, things will be grand, don't worry about it, like, everything will be okay. And I think it very much depends on your observer, but also the culture that you work within.
Yeah.
My last job, the observations were, they were formal observations, but your pay didn't depend on it, one. And two, they felt much more nurturing than they did critical.
Yeah.
And I do think that here maybe that's slightly different, because obviously it's our appraisal, so our pay relies on passing these observations and as such. Mm-hmm. Which I'm not saying is a bad thing actually, but at the same time, you know, it does affect your mindset because you do get more stressed. You do act differently under the pressure, like you were saying, like your class even picks up on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even the class can be completely different.
Yeah, they can.
Because they pick up on your mindset, they pick up on your anxiety or your stress, and they try and act like little soldiers, like all in a line and nobody wants to speak and nobody will put their hand up. Well, not put their hand up because we have a no hands up policy, but like...
Or when they're asking a question though because they don't understand it, they won't put it up then.
Yeah,
because
they won't
too afraid.
Yeah, because they don't. If you've got a good relationship with the class, they don't want you to be tripped up by their question.
Yeah,
and so that.
That in itself causes more problems because then the student isn't doing anything because they don't know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and so it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle. And
yeah.
Like for me, my classes have always been really supportive when I've been being observed. Even from interview or job, the class that I got are my current year nines. And they were a lovely class then and they're a lovely class now.
Yeah.
And I know that. And I think that does help because... Like, I often say to them, oh, you know, you were my first class that I taught here.
Yeah.
And that does definitely build on the relationship that we've got.
I have to say, though, talking about the mindset, being an NQT, I have struggled this year. Because I felt like I've been observed so frequently. And everything was always, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And it is so hard to actually try and pick yourself up when all you're being told time and time and time again is... you need something else to work on, something else to work on, something else to work on. And it's like you don't have that time to actually develop between that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, coming back to see me tomorrow isn't going to mean that I've changed everything overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like the feedback that I got on, whenever it was, I can't remember. I don't even know what day I want, to be quite frank. It was, oh, well, you do take everything so to heart. And when we do tell you things, your head drops. And I'm like, well, yes, my head drops. This is my job that I love. And these are the kids' lives that I'm trying to, you know, better and help and encourage. And when my heart and soul is going into this job and you're turning around and you're saying, oh, well, it was a bit shit, really. Of course my head's going to drop.
Yeah, of course. And it's natural.
When you have a brilliant, you know, idea and it goes to shit and you know it's gone to shit, of course you're going to feel defeated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, right, okay, the person who gave me the feedback, she's been a teacher for 16 years or whatever. Maybe your head doesn't drop anymore. I don't know, but... as someone who's come in with so much enthusiasm
and wanting the best for the kids.
Yeah, and just trying to be the best I can be in a first year.
Yeah.
I think to get... I've had a fair share of negative feedback this year from not... and it's not just been just one area. It's been a lot of areas.
Yeah.
And it felt like that has outweighed the positives.
But you do have subject knowledge.
I do have subject
which
knowledge.
Which I don't have,
and
so...
to be fair, the things that I have been picked up on... you know, praised on, if you will, is my rapport with the kids.
Yeah, I have.
And my marking.
Yeah.
Which, whilst time consuming, every single teacher, when my books are being scrutinised, have come back and said they are absolutely immaculate.
Yeah, mine.
So, you know, at least I know that that area is covered. But it's just sometimes the nitty, you know, the nitty things that, come on, you could have let that one slide. Did you really have to pick up on that thing? Why couldn't you have just, like we were saying before, just give me the positives?
Yeah. And to be fair, like, I think... in our profession, we can't really let things slide, and I do understand that, but and I get why we get observed, but as you're saying, it's just making sure that there's enough time for improvement between observations so that it isn't all, you know, all consuming all the time.
Yeah.
The one of the things that I think ties in quite nicely to that is our ability to reflect.
Yeah.
And for me, like, reflection is something that I do daily, hourly, probably. After each lesson, I'll just take a minute and I'll think, right, was that the best lesson it could have been, and if not, why not, and what could I change, and how could I do it differently, or tomorrow when that pupil comes in, how am I going to change that interaction into a positive one if it was negative, or how am I going to make sure that they're getting the work done or making the effort, or, and it, you know, as we were saying in I can't remember if it was this episode or last one, but that decision making all the time is such an important part of reflecting and making sure that you're always moving forward and never backwards with your profession, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes. And I think it's when I get feedback, sometimes I go, do you know what? Yeah, fair enough. Completely,
oh, yeah,
honestly 100%. Agree with you. And yeah, I know I need to do more. And it's sometimes it's hard to admit when, you know, when you have put so much effort into something to then go, yeah, okay, I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Because obviously they see it through a different lens almost, don't they?
Yeah.
They see what you think is a great lesson, just like your observer the first time said, oh, I didn't like this, or this didn't go to plan, blah, 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 blah. She's looking at it from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
As how you view that lesson.
Yeah.
And that's...
But that
know,
then makes an observation so subjective that one observer could come in and say, tracking lesson, really enjoyed that, thought that the kids were engaged, blah, 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 blah. And then another observer could come in and say, well, that was shit.
Well, that's what happened when I got my feedback. You look at the, because it's the same document.
Yeah.
You look at the, because the first observers observed us three times. So for me, that's a much more accurate view because they see with three different classes.
Yeah, I disagree.
You just had someone who clearly had it in for you, I think.
Had it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I just think, to be honest, I don't agree with your result. What I do think, though, is holistically looking at it.
Well, there are definitely that parts that, merits to that I've worked on that I can say, yep, you know, I've taken that from, and I'm not saying that it was all inaccurate, but a lot of it was.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, like, taking the process as a whole.
Yeah.
That if someone else, maybe my observer who observed me, if they'd have observed you with three different classes, would give you a much more accurate reflection.
Yeah.
Because, for example, they could have seen you with a really, really low ability set, then with your amazing top set.
Yeah.
And seen, you know, what you can do.
The difference.
Yeah. Do you not like?
Definitely. I mean,
you get what I mean. Yeah. But that should surely be. Sorry, going back to what I was saying. When you look at her review compared to the observation that I had, my last one, my most recent one, she's downgraded me on a lot of other things. Where the other one, the first one, said that I was actually good at.
Yeah.
So that's, it's confusing, and it's, and it, as a process, it doesn't work unless you have the same person.
Mm.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, and I think as well, there's so much politics within teaching and within the teaching world that definitely it can be very subjective. And, you know, I think it's just about doing that reflection yourself and saying, was I happy with that lesson? Yes, why? Reasons. No, why not? What can I change? And we do that. We are, as professionals, we are one of the most reflective jobs that there is.
Yeah.
But on the same hand, I think, you know, you cannot get caught up in someone else being really negative about you.
No.
If you know that your kids are making progress and you're confident that they've taken what they need from that lesson, that ultimately is what should matter the most.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you know those kids better than anyone who's going to walk in and see you with that class.
And it's that moment when you actually get the kids who say, have we got you next year? And then the moment they find out that they don't, they're devastated.
Yeah.
Because they know, actually, Miss has got us really far this year. We've worked really hard. Miss got a great relationship.
Yeah.
We have a bit of laughing and joking. We've worked bloody hard and we've got good results out of this.
And they feel safe with you.
Yeah, 100%.
And they know what you're like. They know how you teach. They know what style you're going to use to teach them. And so they do have that comfort zone, if you like. I think the kind of last part of being observed is how you use that feedback to improve, and I think everybody does it differently because you know, some people, me, will be bitter and hold on to, you know, a tiny part of that feedback that they didn't agree with, but also me, I think I have worked on a lot of the things that were brought up there. I don't think it was as effective as it could have been in terms of feedback, because all that it did for me was build up a resentment towards each of the areas that I was told to improve.
Yeah.
Because I thought, like, in my head, I had a bit of a mental block where I don't want to go back and read that document again.
No.
Because it makes me feel like shit. And so, for me, it was counterproductive. I have to say, I'll be completely honest, it was counterproductive.
I do think the whole process, though, it's always there. It's always like, you must improve this, you must improve this, you must improve this. And it's not a nice experience.
No.
In fact, it's frigging horrible. And I much prefer it, you know, when... So I was teaching the same class where I got observed with the other day. I had my door propped open. We had some amazing discussions going on. And the person who observed me actually came into the room and was listening to the conversation. She went, it sounds bloody brilliant in here.
Yeah.
But then when she did the observation, the same feedback didn't come through.
Yeah.
It was all very negative. So it's like... having that moment where she came in and actually just praised my lesson, I found was much more inspiring than actually having her sitting, observing me. When she talked with my students gave them glowing feedback.
Yeah.
And everything that came out of it from their perspective was really good.
Yeah.
But then it's that moment of, well, you're not doing this right, you're not doing this right. And it's just, I do find it quite demoralising sometimes, I have to say.
I do. And I think the most important thing to take away is that we cannot change that we will be observed at every point in our careers, and so we have to accept it. But we don't, you don't always have to agree with your feedback, but what you do have to kind of think about is, how can I use it in the most productive way that I can?
Yeah, definitely.
And for me, like, pace and challenge was one thing that came up for me, albeit they came into a low ability set, a middle ability set, and then a high ability set. But the high ability set they came into, I see that class once a week. It's a shared class. They are obviously my class, but they're not my class, if that makes sense.
Don't you get told what you should be doing that
and
class
I get,
as well?
Yeah, I get told by the person whose class that is what they would like me to focus on for that week. They don't tell me how to go about it, but they tell me what they want me to do.
Yeah.
And so for me it was problematic in that sense anyway. But I have looked at my pacing challenge.
I think you've nailed it this time.
I think, I mean, I don't want to jinx anything.
Touch wood.
So touch wood. But I do think that the feedback this time, hopefully, will be a lot more positive.
I think it will be.
And I'm excited because I think that this class can really show off what they've done, how I've taught them, the way that they've learned things. And so, yeah, I think using my feedback from my last one definitely will help me with this in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's how we sort of use each other as a soundboard to digest our information, because I think sometimes when it is overwhelmingly negative, you need that support from your colleagues, like we were talking about in the last episode, bring you back up and think, actually, well, maybe this isn't what they meant by this, and make you look at it from a different angle.
Definitely. And I think, you know, having that person that you can say, could you just look at this lesson and see what you think of it, you know, like I did to you today, could you come in at break time and have a look at my lesson and see what you think, see if you think it's okay, see if you think I need to scrap it and start again. And just having that reassurance from someone who you respect as a professional and as a friend, who can say, I think you need to change that part, which you did with one of my parts. I was like, yeah, but then I think that this is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And you actually just haven't, like, asking me to justify why I'm doing it, which is what will be in the observation, is important, because it makes you put that into words. Like, I could justify it to you, this is why I think that task will work. But then when you gave me that feedback, I thought about it and changed it, because I was like, right, well, do you know what? Let's make it easier. Let's make it
obvious.
More obvious.
Let's tick that box.
Yeah.
Like, indefinitely.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that has been our rant / I don't think we've given any real advice. I think we've just ranted about
our experiences. No, I disagree. I think we've slightly ranted about our experiences, but I do think we've covered some really, really super important points.
100%.
That I think is very, very much what we need to be doing in our job.
Definitely. So we will be back next week. I think we'll do another Instagram poll for our next episode to see what you guys want to hear from us next. We're loving the fact that our listeners are all over the world now.
Yes, definitely. That's super exciting.
So exciting. Our Instagram feed is certainly growing and growing each week, which is nice, and we've had loads of really nice messages as well, just saying, you know, we can relate, or, oh my god, I'm going to be an NQT next year,
oh my god, I'm not the only one.
Yes.
That's my favourite.
Yeah, definitely.
So keep them coming. We love reading them, we love hearing about other people's experiences, because it's so nice that these things don't just happen to us.
Definitely.
And that they are you guys as well.
100%. So we will be back next week with another episode, and we look forward to hearing your ideas and your thoughts on what the next episode should be about. Thanks for listening.